Today's show is sponsored by Cufflinks.com. That's right, our presenting sponsor all the way through the season, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Use code DVR20 to get 20% off your order. Father's Day is coming up. Check it out. There's amazing new products at Cufflinks.com, including a selection of awesome Aladdin products. That's right. The new live-action movie from Disney is coming out, and Cufflinks.com has what you need. Check it out at Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tim Hines.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Season 8, Episode 6, The Iron Throne. That's right. We're here for the finale, hopefully not the finale podcast of the Fan Roundtable. We may do some more things in the future. We're not sure yet. But for right now, I have two people on with me. And real quick, I'll just let you know, we do have other projects going on. So right off the bat, don't forget, DVRpodcast.com. Check us out. And we will bring you excellent content as the people coming on with us will tell you about possibly. First on, I'm going to let you introduce yourself. We got Gina on with us. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Nice to be talking about the finale and sad at the same time.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But we got a lot of good things, I think, to talk about. And I think that the good are going to outweigh the bad. And we'll see what happens. And we also got on with us the man from the north, Jim from Canada. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Nice to join you again for one last episode. Hopefully it's an engaging conversation because there's a lot to talk about for sure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You've been a staple of the show for quite a long time, and I think it's fitting that you're on with us.
Yeah, I was hoping to get a spot tonight because I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, well, we'll see where it heads, and I think we're going to have a good one because, I know pretty much where you were thinking a lot, and what you expect, and I know from the internet, which I don't think you participate on social medias, but Gina does, and I know we have very similar thoughts, and we were pretty happy, so I think it'll be a good conversation, and I'm sad to see it go, but I'm sad to see all these friendships grow, and we'll see where this leads. But I want to start off because I've been doing wacky things and giving this colors, this my ratings, and I'm going to tell everybody this episode got blue, and blue for many reasons, but the type of blue it got is Dodger blue, because my favorite team is the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they were Dodger blue, specific kind of blue. And it's near my heart, like the show, and I love them, and I love the show. So I thought that was a good color to cap it with. And I know it's silly. I know nobody really cares, but I had fun with it, and we're going to talk about it. So I'm going to jump right in and let Gina say how she felt about the episode.
I mean, I guess if you're going to put numbers to it, I would give it like a solid 8. And if I were going to give it a color, I would give it a nice sunset over, the sunset sea on the way to whatever is west of Westeros.
Wow. That's interesting. I don't even know if that's in like the Home Depot little swatch section, but that's pretty cool. Hard eights. Good for this show. I think that's tough because I had to stop with the numbers because I was very rough at one point, and I felt, what's the point? I love the show, and I stopped giving it hard numbers. But I know Jim's been giving it numbers, and he's kind of in the same boat I used to be in with the hard numbers. So, Jim, how do you feel?
I'm going to give it, a 9 out of 10. I was hoping to give it a 10 out of 10, but there were a few things that, brought it down a little bit. But, yeah, a 9 out of 10 for a number. And for color, I'm going to go with a rainbow, man. It's just... as an overall kind of picture of how the series ended, I was very happy with it. And, it covered all the points that I was looking forward for it to kind of touch on.
Yeah, you know, I felt so satisfied at the end. And, I, you know, forget the internet and everybody's quick knee-jerk reactions. I feel like, especially us and the people who listen to the podcast, we put in so many hours to thinking about the show, watching it. And I feel like the masses overtook that from us a little bit this season. But I feel like I'm reclaiming it right now and saying that it was so satisfying. I have a few points that we'll, you know, maybe we'll just touch on through the episode, but more themes. But what I really liked was that in the end, it all reset and it, you know, brought new people up to similar positions. It opened up a little few doorways for intrigue, and it gave everybody that we loved up until this point a purpose and a duty that pretty much they sought after and wanted. And to me, I'm not really sure, you know, how much more satisfied I could have got, you know, unless they went some wild route and had, you know, something crazy. Like, to me, if it was going to be like nice and diplomatic, this was the way I liked, you know, I feel like it went out really, really gracefully.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think they did a better job than I think I expected wrapping it up, kind of based on how the season was going. Because I know there's a lot of controversy, some people are unhappy, but I think you kind of get to the third episode after the battle and you're like, wow, we have three episodes to wrap this up. How are they going to do it? Is there going to be enough time? And I'm just glad they did kind of the due diligence and gave us a nice epilogue with following Jon and Sansa and Arya kind of into what was next for them. I thought they ended it well. You know, my one criticism is I do think they could have taken a full 10 episodes with this, even with the longer episodes. I think it did feel very compressed. A lot happened in a short period of time. And I think people might have felt a little more like everything happened as it should have if they'd had a couple more episodes in there to kind of stretch it out and put some more proof points into place.
So let me ask this. Did you rewatch the series or the season before, right before this one started?
Yeah, I did.
So, with, you know, I feel like that's a minority, you know, of the viewers. So some might have caught up maybe the last episode. And I feel like that's what made it feel rushed. But if you piece together those last few seasons, at least the last three, it felt very in line. Like it moved. I pretty much finished like a week before the season started, and I felt like it kind of picked right up. And we didn't get a lot of crazy time travel and people moving really one place to another too fast. You know, I think it's more of like fan service that in separation anxiety that we want more. But I think when we rewatch the whole season, I think it's going to fit nice. It's going to slide right in there.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could have probably spent one more episode up at Winterfell, maybe, you know, either before the battle or after. And I think they could have probably spent one more episode preparing to take on Cersei just to build in, I think, a few more events or happenings that would have really, like, super validated Daenerys' turn of heart at the end. I think that was my one thing. Because even though, yes, I definitely agree, they planted nuggets all along the series. And I think, honestly, once she burned those Dothraki a few seasons ago, I'm like, there's potential for her to go full on Mad Queen, just like, because this it seemed very reminiscent of what her father did to the Starks. So it didn't come as a surprise, but I do think it happened more abruptly than we thought. I would have liked to see a couple more things really get under her skin, more conversation with maybe John and Tyrion and people to try and like see her ebb towards madness, and then they kind of draw her back just to make it like really like a, you know, to just give it a little more, I don't know, make us feel better about her going crazy, I guess. That's my personal thing, I guess.
Well, you know, Axel and Heath, they brought up a really good point on the initial reaction. Like, did she go crazy or was it a coordinated move? Because if you go crazy and snap, like, she made some pretty rational decisions that seem irrational to us, but like Grey Worm knew about them. Like, they were coordinated. If you go mad, I think you make a lot of knee-jerk decisions.
Well, I do think, and maybe she had decided that she was going to burn the city regardless, but I think, you know, Tyrion had said, if you hear those bells, you know, it's over. And she heard the bells, and that's when she really started. And I think it was just, you know, I could have said, okay, maybe that was planned, but then it was just kind of the way she was talking about, we're going to liberate, you know, the Seven Kingdoms from Winterfell to Dorne, and kind of starting about her, you know, in about her plan of liberation for the rest of the continent and the rest of the world. And it's like, well, you just liberated King's Landing. So, which is Westeros for all intents and purposes, and dispel the queen. What are you going to do exactly to liberate the rest of these territories? Does it involve burning everyone else as well? And I think that was kind of when I was like, I think she's lost the plot a little bit. Like, maybe it wasn't crazy, but I think her sense of what was right and good definitely did get warped in a certain way that was not really going to be for the benefit of the people, but in her mind, it was what was going to benefit, even if it's, and I think that's kind of led into the whole conversation with Tyrion and Jon too.
I think it was more vanity than madness. And I was really hyping up and, you know, chalking it to the madness, at least after last week. And, you know, it really seemed like it was more vanity. And I don't know how mad that makes her. And I don't know. You know, I don't, you definitely don't like what she did. And, you know, I like kind of the way she went out, but it was, you know, that was very bittersweet. I think one of the bittersweet things that were told, quote unquote, told us we're going to be in here. But let's hear what Jim, you know, what do you think here? Think she was mad? Like, what do you think? It was something else in her. Like, think she was destined for to do that?
The previous episode, I was leaning a bit more towards mad. But with this episode, like Gina was saying, with her speech at the beginning, which was very autocratic and very, you know, militaristic, when she was saying, "We'll take this and we'll take that." I think, excuse me, your choice of words for vanity is a good fit here, right? Because she's always kind of thought, you know, I'm going to take everything with fire and blood, with fire and blood. She's always said it, but I don't think she ever believed it necessarily, you know, to the core. And then with the events of the last couple of episodes where she started losing people close to her, you know, you got Jorah, and then you had Missandei missing, getting killed, the dragons. I think eventually she just, like you said, for herself, she just turned and said, you know what? I will take it with fire and blood. So, I don't think she necessarily went completely mad. I think it was a choice. But the last two episodes did a good job of kind of, you know, making you guess a little bit. And then eventually giving us that picture with this last episode where you could see her face. She was almost giddy in a sense at some point of talking about it, right? So, yeah, I think vanity is a good choice. And I don't think she went out full mad.
Well, Shayna in the chat on YouTube says that she's very Machiavellian. And, you know, that's a pretty good frame of reference for, you know, our society to compare, I would think.
Yeah, it's one of... Sorry, go ahead, Gina.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing. Just saying, yeah.
Yeah. Same. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, Shayna's always got good stuff. Ever since we've been doing this YouTube thing, and I've been checking out other people's you know, shows. She's always bringing really good stuff in on the chat. So I want to just big her up because this, you know, might be the way out episode, but you know, we're not going to take the way out. We're going to say peace to all our people. So, you know, I was getting a little emotional thinking about it before, but you know, I want to acknowledge everybody along the way. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. But let's jump back into the episode before I need tissues, but I want to talk, you know, let's start about, I guess we'll go kind of in the beginning. How do you guys feel about the family, you know, thing with Tyrion?
You know, he started going down there and I'm like, he's going to see a gold hand. Like, I kind of knew that was how he was going to see them. And I think it was even more sad that he chose to take the rubble off of them to see their faces one last time. And, it was rough. And I think it was also just a sign that they had tried to escape and couldn't. And it was really very sad. And, you know, he's definitely the last Lannister now. I thought it was a great performance from him. And I think that's what we needed to see too. From him, we needed to see more kind of the humanity and the loss on a more personal level from some of the characters to help counterbalance kind of Daenerys and the path that she was then turned on. So,
yeah, I agree. It was very touching to see him kind of make his way down there. And initially, I thought he wasn't going to make it through that little opening, but yeah, he found his way through. And it was the last two episodes. He's done a great job. Peter Dinklage as Tyrion, right, with the freeing of Jaime and that whole speech there. I know we talked about it last week. For me, it was one of the most touching moments, you know, and this week just to kind of see his overall grief, right? It wasn't anger initially. It was just grief, even though it's Cersei. And then afterwards, kind of that anger of, you know, Daenerys did this to them in a sense, right? So it was very, very touching. And yeah, it was a good scene for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to like it. I watched it twice already, the episode, and I just, that scene just to me was unnecessary. I didn't buy I didn't feel the emotion. I felt the emotion in other scenes in this episode, like where I was like, you know, my jaw was on the ground, and I was like, you know, welling up a little bit and getting very emotional. But I don't have any brothers or sisters that sleep with each other that I could like relate to. I never shot our dad with a crossbow. Like, there's a lot of things that I can't relate to, I love Peter Dinklage and he totally redeems himself later on that we'll talk about, but I don't know. I
think it was just an easy way to kind of get him to, I believe he gave up the Hand of the Queen afterwards, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it was just an easy transition, right? Just to show his breaking point where, although it's his family and they betrayed Daenerys and, you know, they're the enemy in a sense. I think it was kind of a way to get him to that point where he just gives up his position.
All right. I mean, that's a good point. That's, I guess, built a little bit into the thinking thing that we were led to believe that he was doing for all this time, you know, the sadness and that, I guess, this whole season, because I felt he's been too sad this whole season. And I think it's knowing now, added with his decisions and his suggestions, I feel that maybe it was more of him reflecting on things. And I know that I felt that he felt real sad in the beginning when Varys like told him in the first episode, I think it was, about, you know, this whole thing with John. Actually, it was, I guess, second episode when Sansa let out the cat out of the bag and Varys broke down. Like, I felt like Tyrion really felt sad for believing in something so much and dropping the ball. And I think that was the love he was talking about when he was talking to John. But you know, other than the family stuff, I guess it was necessary for building to there. So let's go to where he talked to John, because this is like one of the best scenes in the show. And Gina, you know, want to start here?
Yeah, I mean, I think this conversation between John and Tyrion, it was so good for so many reasons. I felt like it took us back to season one in a way when they were first forming a friendship. And Tyrion was being really honest with John about the type of people he was going to find at the Wall. That it, you know, the people there weren't as good and full of valor as maybe John was led to believe. That a lot of them were evil and criminals and committed crimes and not very noble. And they kind of got into that conversation where, you know, like what definition of good is really good? You know, it was kind of a much more advanced version of that conversation in terms of looking at the bigger picture. What does a good ruler really look like? You know, does it really matter how many people they've conquered? You know, it doesn't matter. I don't know. It doesn't matter how evil they are. Is it more about the lives that they are able to salvage and save and change for the better? And it was all really leading up to that point. And I think I was like, I think I said it right before John did, that that thing that Maester Aemon had told him, that love is the death of duty. And I thought it was so perfect that Tyrion said, well, maybe duty is the death of love. And I thought, I don't know, I just thought that scene was incredible. And, you know, that Tyrion was really kind of, it was almost kind of like Maester Aemon again, you know, Jon Snow, kill the boy. And Tyrion is saying, Jon, you need to decide now what you're going to do. You need to decide as you leave this room what your choice is. And deep down, you know what it is. So yeah, I thought that was just such a great scene between those two.
Jim, you want to jump in there? You got anything on that?
Yeah, I liked how he was trying to convince him, you know, trying to show him that, you know, how he was giving the examples of Daenerys killing the maester, the slavers, killing the Dothraki, and saying they were all bad people, but eventually these were all innocent people in King's Landing. Like, his trying to convince Jon was as his last effort, you know. He pretty much knows he's going to be killed, more or less, executed for treason. And I also enjoyed how they didn't give you an answer. Jon never responded back. He just kept trying to defend Daenerys and, you know, my queen, and she'll make it right. So as a scene, it was perfect. It was a little bit long, I think, but, you know, it just showed Tyrion's kind of turn where he's also given up on Daenerys at this point, right? But Jon is still, you could see that North, you know, Ned Stark and him, loyalty and honor, and just he keeps trying to convince Tyrion and the reverse, that they'll make it better somehow. So enjoyed it. It was great. Great acting on both their parts, you know. But I think it was just a tad bit too long. You know, it was almost like that story where he talks about crushing the Beatles. So it was great to see him act it out, but, you know.
Well, I think it was necessary to be that long. Like, I felt John's anguish. John was crying. Like, John was so upset that he had to make this decision, or even think about it, because he bought into it. Everybody was all in on this. Like, it's so heartbreaking to think that everything you put into this was for nothing. And, you know, all the things that you were striving to make better just got destroyed. And just like I was saying earlier, how Tyrion got so upset when Varys pointed all that out to him, excuse me, John, the same way as Tyrion delivered it through now double confirmation with Varys and him being, you know, giving up their lives for what's actually right. Like, Tyrion just knows what he had to do. And he knew that if we could save the people, it would be worth it. And he didn't even know, you know, to this point, it could have been his sister and Jaime that made the call to get the bells rung. You know, we heard the people yell it, but, you know, we don't know if he thinks that. So you know, it's still, it's so, I don't know. I found it like one of the best scenes ever in the show because John now, it was,
oh, yeah, sure, it was definitely very
proving it to him. And
emotional.
But John still didn't believe it. I felt we left that scene with John still not believing and John believing in Danny. And yeah, it wasn't until that other conversation. And
that's what I liked about the scene.
It built.
And I don't recall when John bumped into Arya, but remember Arya said to him, "You're not safe here. I know a killer when I see one." And, you know, and she was talking about Daenerys. I can't recall if that was before he went to see Tyrion or if it was right after, but, you know, it was a couple in a row.
I believe it was before.
It was before, yeah. Because she made her way up to the steps while John was up there and Tyrion threw the pin away.
Let's just talk about that shot before Tyrion came out. When
the dragon wings?
Oh, yeah. That incredible.
Was unbelievable. Like, that was the confirmation almost that, like, we got that she kind of really went all tar, full on tar dragon. Like, she really bonded. And that scene with it came out. And then the other scene, though, when she came out on the perch with all the armies, and then the dragon came up on the ledge there. I mean, that just was so powerful. And to have that happen, I was not confident that things were going to, you know, I wasn't even thinking that things were going to happen the way they did. Like, I thought, like, now it's on. And it was such a welcome change of pace and such Game of Thrones fashion that it twisted. I welcome that so much. But that shot was just, I don't know, I would love a poster, like, to go next to the King's poster.
How long till somebody gets a tattoo of that?
What time is it? Oh, it's probably been, it's probably been dry about, I don't know, an hour. It's probably got a little crust on it.
Yeah, it was very, she showed her power in that scene, right? Like, you could tell with the mood, the lighting, it was somewhat like overcast. You could, you know, it was just a dark scene. It was brightly lit, but it was a dark scene in terms of how she's approaching it, right? Just pretty much stamping her authority on everything and going forward. And she's speaking to the people that have followed her, you know, more or less, and she came into power, right? So it was a great, like, hurrah speech for her troops, that's for sure.
She started out with blood of my blood. Like, it was so inspiring. And someone had mentioned, I'm not sure if it was on this show or one of the other pods, but, like, about her hair, or maybe it was online, but either way, her hair seemed like kept getting more braids every week. And I haven't rewatched the season yet. I'm going to go back and do that whole thing, but I want to notice that. I don't know if anybody picked that up, but she also came in on, like, this full on brand new outfit. Like, she was hardcore. So, you know, it's just like the way we saw when Cersei came out and had that whole new look and the metal on, like, it was so powerful, but it felt so evil at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. The costumes on the show, incredible throughout, particularly for the women. But,
shout out Michelle Farley. She's awesome.
Yeah, they deserve a 10 out of 10 every episode.
Absolutely. So, all right. So Danny's on the perch there. Tyrion comes out. John's giving that look. What do you guys, do you have anything on this? Like, do you think this was tense? I was tense.
Yeah, it was, that's one of the things about the episode. It was, I wouldn't say tense. I would say more anticipation. Like, you kind of see where it's going, and that blank expression she had on her face, it was almost like she was looking right through things instead of at things. And that's kind of what turned me over into the, instead of going mad, she was actually believing in what she was doing, and, you know, she's focused on it. So yeah, it was again, great acting, and, you know, you could see her character take that turn. And to me, again, it didn't seem like she went mad. It just seemed like she believed her myth, right? Her destiny.
Yeah.
That's it, Gina? Just, yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like we kind of skipped backwards. But I mean, that's, I just kind of felt like when she was giving that speech, yeah, it was powerful. And I mean, you know, there, I feel like there was something that Dario said to her a few seasons back. He said, you're not a leader, you're a conqueror. And I think that became very clear with her move last episode and her speech now, that, you know, she was more intent on conquering everything first to then potentially build a better world. But I think she was so much stronger a conqueror, particularly with the dragons, than a potential leader, that, you know, that was always going to be the downfall. And I just think she, you know, I think definitely vanity is in play. I think any politician, really, anyone who wants to run has to have a certain level of narcissism and in order to do that. And some people's narcissism is far greater than others. And while I don't think hers is the worst I've seen, she's got a dragon, which changes things a little bit. But
I've seen worse.
Oh, we all have seen worse than hers every day. But
it's on the other cable networks.
Yeah, yeah. But I, you know, it was just kind of, I think, validation the way she was talking. It's like she's not talking about leading. She's talking about more conquering. And, you know, I think Tyrion recognized that. I think Jon recognized that. And it's like, well, how many people do you have to conquer and then burn to kind of cleanse the world of who you think your enemies are before you're done? And while, yes, maybe she didn't go full on as mad as her father was, there is something similar about that. He was like trying to kind of purge and cleanse people that did not believe in him anymore and did not follow him. And I do feel in a similar way, that's what she was trying to do. I don't think she was crazy about it, but yeah, I think she was very aware of what she was going to do next. You know, which is a different type of thing. So.
Yeah, and I think her awareness, like you said, Gina, was evident in one of the scenes there where when she tells him to take Tyrion away, to me it looked like she was almost conflicted somewhat, right? She was a little bit angry, a little bit sad, a little bit... I don't know if you guys caught that, but it stood out to me that she wasn't really... She was authoritative, but at the same time it looked like she questioned herself a little bit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, and that's very... It was super uncharacteristic of her. She just burnt a whole city of people who are innocent, and this guy just did her super dirty, and now she's take him away to the cell. Like that, to me, like that would have been, and that you should have instantly executed him, and it would have showed this massive army that, you know, you don't mess around, even though they still believe in you. Like that's still another tool. But instead, like, what was the theory, like, what was she thinking? Like, maybe I'll do this in the dark, like I did the Varys with nobody watching. Or to me, like, there was a few things like that. I don't want to really throw too many Sansa's lemon cakes at, but that's one of those things that was weird. Like, it was out of character, and maybe she was conflicted, but she was so sure about all the other shit she was telling Jon, like, and especially when she made her plan with Grey Worm, like. To me, he's unnecessary, like, to her, especially if he serves no purpose. Like, what are you saving him for?
That's what caught my attention, right? That she was very quick in saying, take him, but she took a look at him after, and it was almost like a regret, in a sense. Now, she snapped out of that fairly quickly, but I showed a little bit of conflict there.
I think she does have a few shreds of conscience left, and I think Tyrion is one of them, and you know, he did say to her right before she had him taken away, yes, I freed my brother and you slaughtered a city. Like who betrayed who? Because he said to her very clearly, when they ring those bells, surrender. The city has fallen, and you're queen. And, you know, it was really that simple. You know, and she said, don't free your brother, and kind of the consequences of, you know, Tyrion freeing his brother, he knew what he was doing and that it could potentially lead to his demise. And he accepted that. And, you know, I don't know that Daenerys really thought about the consequences of what it would mean after she burned a whole city down, particularly with innocent people in it. So, you know, I think it's, you know, I think her rationale was, well, all these people were free and they could have turned against Cersei. And I think that just kind of goes to show how little she knew about how Westeros ran. That you don't need to, you know, it's like you don't have to be enslaved to still be a prisoner to the politics that rule your nation. You know, and I just think she you know, that was a lack of understanding and education. And, you know, she spent a few more years in Westeros before trying to seize the Iron Throne. Maybe she would have learned that.
Yeah, she was never really taught how to rule, right? She was, like we said earlier, she was always conquering, but she wouldn't stick around too long, or the decision she would make, you know, there was always a conflict, right? You kill the masters, the slavers, and then, you know, then the people that are slaves that had jobs now are complaining. She was always, you know, unable to balance the two together when she made those decisions. So
she left Astapor so fast, like then everybody turned back to normal. Like there was, she moved very quickly, even though we complained about seeing her at times move all these places. It was very quick that, you know, she was doing all this, and now it seems it was for a purpose to show us that it wasn't enough time to learn. She should have, you know, paid more attention and, you know, learned their governmental systems and fixed them instead of just changing everything first. It's too hard to change everything. And, you know, as we see, even though the wheel's been broken, it's essentially been repaired, just in a different, you know, size, maybe, you know, maybe new rims, something like that. But, you know, it's still the wheel. Let's take a second. I want everybody to know we got our good buddy Marcus here from Guest the Throne. And I just, you know, I don't know the stats and the full on details, and he's here, and hopefully he could tell us who was the winner, who, you know, what kind of numbers we got here. And welcome on, Marcus.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. With the conclusion yesterday, up until the last episode, we had 360 perfect pools. So 360 people out of around 42,000 still had, they had predicted all the deaths correctly up until the last episode. And we had three bonus questions. Who dies first, who dies last, and who wins the throne, which more on that in a second. So after last night, no one finished with the perfect pool. I thought that was really cool. I thought for sure that there was a leak or two. And in reviewing some of the data at the start of the season, we did a radar chart of who all the users had predicted to win the Iron Throne versus who Vegas predicted to win the Iron Throne. And it was probably one of the more interesting pieces of data that we sliced up, because everyone was all the users, like all the fans, all in on Daenerys and Jon. Vegas, on the other hand, was heavily weighted in Bran's favor. Once we adjusted the odds to percentages, I think it was like 40% had 40%, like Vegas gave Bran a 40% chance of winning the throne. And it was like totally different compared to like all the entries and death pools that we had received. So they definitely knew something. I don't know where they found out
from. It's probably all the people that live in all the different places where they film this stuff. That's crazy. It's so different. Wow.
Yeah. And I think for us, we met today to talk about, since the Iron Throne was kind of melted, should we have scored like the last question or not on the throne on like the death pool? And we finally decided that yes, we are going to score it. And we gave it to Bran. And the reason for that is because they had a meeting, and the meeting, it went kind of how I imagined it going in a way. I thought that the ending of the show, I wasn't sure who was going to live or die, but I thought the ending would be that they would institute democracy throughout the Seven Kingdoms. So we decided that we were still going to score it for Bran because they did consciously go against choosing democracy. They all left at Sam, unfortunately. And then they went with giving it to Bran. So we thought that since it was brought up in the show explicitly, when I first caught on, y'all were talking about breaking the will versus repairing it, and it, in a way, things have changed, but not a ton. But yeah, I mean, it was super interesting, and if you all participated, thank you all for participating. It's been great, and we're going to gear up for the prequels when they come along, and I'm not sure how we'll do it for season one, but maybe season two when we know who the characters are.
Well, I just first want to say thank you so much for you guys putting in that effort and doing that. And I do feel that yours is way more fan based and way more accurate than that Vegas line, which is kind of crazy because, you know, if you do sports gambling or anything like that and look at those numbers, Vegas is always super close and it's unreal. I don't know what kind of robots they have out there, but there's stuff that are probably going to be on next season of Westworld, and we'll talk about then. But going back to what you said about the Iron Throne, I do believe that you're correct. I would definitely back what you said because the Iron Throne is, I would say, figuratively, like more than like actual has to be that throne. You know, it's who rules, who rules the Seven Kingdoms, I would say, like more than the actual sitting on the chair. You know, because I sat on the chair once when it was on display in the Times Square building. So, you know, there's a chance I could have wrote myself in at one on a technicality, but yeah, but nah, it was awesome the way it ended. I think that, you know, what you said is right. You know, that's the winner of the throne. But you know, did you have a good time doing this? Like, did you enjoy the season still, or was it too much work?
Yeah, it was pretty stressful. Well, it was pretty stressful getting it developed. So we like rushed this thing out the door and developed it in pretty much a week. We designed and developed it and got it out the door in around a week. and after we got that done, it was good. And I was really nervous about when the show first started because we, at like the premiere of the first episode, we were getting thousands of hits per minute, which is pretty crazy even for like larger websites. And then we were really nervous. Like the first episode, we were like, well, we've never actually seen this like scoring engine that I wrote actually work. Like we had no idea if any of it was going to work. And we were just like, we were going to look ridiculous with like 40,000 angry fans. But luckily the first episode, no one died. So that gave us like an extra week to like make sure everything worked and get it all together. And then by the third episode, when people started dying, we were completely ready to go. But no, I really enjoyed it. I know that there's been a lot of mixed reviews on, and I've seen a lot of people online not happy with it or thought it should have went a different way. Overall, I thought the season was really good. I do think that some of the character development was accelerated, and that acceleration probably raised a couple more questions on like how quickly things happened, but I got to give it to the showrunners. I think they've done a fantastic job they've been with this for 12 years now, I believe. So I don't blame them at all for wanting, you know, to go on to a different project. And I think they wrapped it up in a really nice way. I mean, Ren definitely wasn't my choice, but I mean, I can't complain with how the show went. It was great.
Well, if Bran was your choice, I would have thought you knew something. So, no, I didn't get to participate. Me and Axel stayed out of it just in case you needed a tiebreaker. So we wanted to be completely impartial. So there was no question. But yeah, I know a bunch of people. Heath got in it, and a lot of people really enjoyed it. So, thank you for doing that, because doing a podcast sometimes it can take you out of the show a little bit if it seems like work. But we've kind of fine tuned it a little bit, so it's not work. We used to go hard taking notes right away, but now it's enjoy it, rewatch it, take notes, or not even that many notes, just ask good questions, and that's kind of where we're at. And I know sometimes doing the works can seem like work, and then you're like watching it and trying to count everybody on screen. I don't know how what your method was, but that's appreciate what you guys did.
Yeah, for sure, and thank y'all for like helping us out and getting the word out. I mean, it was huge. Once y'all started sharing us, a couple other folks started sharing us, and then by the day of the premiere, we were getting a ton of users. I mean, we were getting hundreds of users per minute, which is great. I mean, that's the best success that we've seen in any of like the products we've developed.
Yeah, excellent, and I'm glad you also still got to enjoy the show. So,
hey, Marcus, can I just jump in?
Yeah.
Good job on the pool. Loved it. Participated. Out of curiosity, where does 25 out of 40 get me?
25 out of 40, based on what I saw, I can't give you the exact number. I didn't make like a global ranking system, unfortunately. But 25 is pretty good. It's actually really good. I didn't see many people above 30, actually. The bonus questions were weighted about 10 points. A lot of people got the deaths correctly, but answered the bonus questions incorrectly. So if you're at 25, that's probably at least 80th percentile, I would say. Maybe 50th. Nice. Yeah, based off what I saw.
So I can put a claim on the throne now.
Yeah.
Jim, you have a lot of links on your Maester chain. I mean, you know, this just gets you another one.
There you go. It'll be a digital link.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did a great job. It was fun participating, man. Good job.
Awesome. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yep, for sure.
Gina, did you participate?
I didn't, and I'm such a huge data nerd that I thought it was such a great idea, but I kind of never got around to signing up. But I mean, I think it's fascinating about like just the comparison between the Vegas odds, and I don't know if you've pitched. I'm in PR, so I don't know if you've pitched that kind of your data story to anyone. But I think there are a couple outlets, like I think New York Times and Recode or a couple outlets that cover data stories like this. So if you haven't put a PR person on that yet, you should, because I think they would totally cover this.
Yeah, we tried. I think we pitched, like I slid into like hundreds of DMs of people that either had written about Game of Thrones or was involved in the community, and not many people responded. Barstool Sports, they did respond, and they actually helped us a ton. They actually created a poll for their website and ran it alongside their podcast, and that was pretty great. That got us a lot of traction. But we offered the data. We offered first dibsies on like the data and everything to publishers. But I don't know. Maybe we didn't approach it right. I'm not in PR, and none of the team is either. So that's probably an opportunity for us to get a little bit better.
Very cool. You should do a poll on odds on what potential sequels could be like, because I feel like they laid a lot of heavy groundwork last night about a couple things that can potentially happen down the road here.
Yeah, all of my friends are really excited if there's an Arya, Arya spinoff.
West of Westeros, I'm in. That's what it should be called, West of Westeros.
She's actually going to invent the globe when she comes back and hits Essos by Karth. And she's like, oh, wow, look at this. And then she finds a safe and she thinks she finds treasure. And there's just two skeletons in there. She's like, who are these people? It's going to be like Indiana. She puts a hat on. She has a whip. But yeah, all right. So we had a lot of laughs there. We had a lot of good data. And let's talk about a great scene. And it was a great scene for film, not so much for emotion and not so much if you're a fan of Daenerys. But I want to go, since we kind of left off with all the talking and the pairing, and before we get to the dust settling, let's get to the guts. And by I mean guts is where Jon's secondary sword went right through Daenerys. We've got, so yeah, let's talk about that, because we were leading up to Daenerys getting, you know, her different emotions and feelings, and now we have Jon coming to approach. And to me, this was might have been a little bit better than the Tyrion conversation, but this one, as far as like the emotion and the acting, I felt it so hard. And Jon's been such an emo character, you know, this whole time. He's been very soft spoken, quiet, even though he's done some really cool things. There's been a lot of emotion in his decision making. I think that as tough as all the Starks are, they've all put emotion into different decisions. So I think it's kind of natural that we see that. But now we see his breakdown of that and his analysis. And to make that decision, to me, was probably the hardest thing he's ever done, except come back from the dead. But I loved it. I didn't, you know, I wasn't so heartbroken for Danny. I was more heartbroken for John for having to do this. You know, so Gina, you're giggling, but I don't think it's that funny for John.
No, I was giggling at something you said. Not
I know. I'm really
kidding. But I mean, first of all, when John starts walking in to see her, and then all of a sudden we see Drogon kind of move and shake off the snow. I mean, I was just thinking about it right now, but there's something about the fact that there's a dragon covered in snow. And in some ways that's what John has always been. And I always felt like John had a really weird connection with that dragon, you know, kind of from the time he pet it, on Dragonstone. And even when Drogon was like looking at him when he was, you know, went on that flight with Daenerys at the beginning of the season. But I thought that was just kind of another beautiful dragon shot. But yeah, I think it was, you know, he went in there and he's like, you burned little children, you know, and he was horrified. And all she was kind of talking about when she was a little child and couldn't even count to 20. And it was kind of just this really strange, you know, this kind of like an argument, and she was trying to convince him. And for a minute, I thought he was really buying into it. And I'm like, you need to kill her now, is what I was like kind of thinking and maybe yelling at the TV. And then all of a sudden he did. And I was like, whoa, I didn't think he would actually do it. But, you know, for all like the prophecies and everything that was laid out in this show, and destiny and whatnot, there is, there is a story in the books about, that Azor Ahai ends up killing this woman that he loves, Nissa Nissa, with a sword through the heart. And so Misa.
Sounds like Misa.
Kind of, yeah. And so I was like, oh, this kind of came full circle. Like, I'm sure people that had just been watching the show and never read the books know nothing about it, but it was very, you know, it was a big moment. And I think some people speculated that could potentially happen. I didn't think it really was. And then, you know, there are a lot of similarities, like she died in his arms, just like Ygritte died in his arms. You know, he's got really bad luck with ladies. You know, he was, I think, torn up. And you know, when he's standing there and the dragon comes and like realizes Daenerys is dead and like trying to move her and he's looking at Jon, I think at that moment, Jon wanted to die and he was ready to let that dragon burn him. You know, I think he was, I think he hated himself. And I think he was just like, you know, life's over, kill me now.
I think that though, but that passed on from the Varys realization to being, and then being willing to die. Tyrion, same thing, they're willing to die. And Jon finally having that realization, because I don't know if he even could anticipate coming out of that room. Like, you know, it's weird, like, but it was hard for him, you know, and seeing that, it was scary because I thought Jon was going to get burnt.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I did too. I thought he was toast and he was standing there and he was ready to take whatever fire came his way. And then that dragon turned its head and like put all his anger onto that throne, which I thought was brilliant, amazing, because that throne was supposedly forged in dragonfire and then it had to be destroyed in dragonfire. And, you know, they didn't totally break the wheel, but they got rid of that throne that the Targaryens in this weird way created the wheel, in fact, and the dragon created that throne and then the dragon destroyed the throne. And I know that like the Targaryens and their dragons are supposed to like share these kind of like crazy mental bonds. But it was almost like that dragon knew it was Daenerys' quest for the throne that killed her. And that was really the only revenge it could enact, because he could have burned Jon, but I don't think he would have. I think, you know, if there is down the line some type of sequel and that dragon's still around and Jon Snow's still around, it's very likely that Jon will ride that dragon one day.
It looked like they were bonding. I thought they were bonding.
Yeah.
It disconnected with her. I thought it was the next Targaryen. And I for some reason, when it turned and did the second like burst for no reason of fire, I thought it was turning so Jon could climb on him. I don't know.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting an exit for Jon to exit on that dragon and fly away and never be seen from again. You know, just one of the many ways that lives inside the fans' minds of how things could end. But I do think there was a bond between him and that dragon. And I just think it was like super poetic for that dragon to melt that throne into molten lava, metal, whatever. But no, that was a really great scene.
So since we're on the molten throne that kind of screwed up Marcus's day for making decisions, Marcus, how do you feel about this whole scene and Jon and Daenerys' outcome?
Yeah, I thought the way it was shot was amazing. I mean, throughout the entire last season, I thought the cinematography was so great. Yeah, when I was watching that, and I was watching it with the guy that helped me create the throne, and we were just like, no, don't do it. don't burn the Iron Throne, because now we're going to get hundreds of emails of people asking us how we're going to score things.
See, so it took you a little bit out of the moment.
yeah, that was like the one moment where I'm like, I'm not enjoying the show right now. I just genuinely don't want to respond to like a ton of emails. See, we really got a couple though. We did get emails like asking how we're going to do it, but no backlash on how we scored it yet, which is good. But no, I really liked it. I thought that seeing how the dragon responded was great, and Jon had. I guess the one thing about that part, that then looking back on like the show, is when Tyrion's talking about who has a better story than Bran, I'm like, did we all forget like Jon was a bastard, that he's like, he went to the Night's Watch and then he was Lord Commander and then he died and then he was revived and then he like killed the woman he loved for the good of the realm. Like, I thought that was a pretty solid story, but
this is, that's kind of a lot of people's arguments who are really for John. And I could see that as a valid argument and a position, but at the time, given what the circumstances were with, I think, being diplomatic, trying to appease Grey Worm, which I think we'll get into in a little bit. But I think that it had to happen the way it did because, you know, all that, you know, a lot of people brought up the lineage thing. All that to me gets thrown out the door when, you know, in the beginning, after Robert died, like once everybody starts grabbing for power, like it's now who's the toughest and who can get there. And to me, you know, the lineage thing, a lot of people are like, but he's never said his full name. They never mentioned it out loud. To me, that's irrelevant. Like that's John. It would have been on his merits as it's kind of given to Bran. I could see either way. I don't know, you know, if how they would have worked that. But it would have definitely screwed up Vegas.
Yeah.
Jim, what do you think?
Well, I think that was, John's story all along, man. It was that whole bittersweet ending that people were talking about, and George R. R. Martin has described, right? Where he came from nothing, became something, and then went back to nothing, pretty much. So I think with John's arc, I like the way it worked out. It turned out very nicely. With regards to Daenerys and him and that scene, it was so interesting watching the two of them go back and forth between, you know, she's saying, there, it's going to be okay. And he's saying, no, it's not going to be okay, more or less, right? And when she turned around and said to him, they don't get to choose what's good, that's when you saw John's kind of perspective change, right? I'm not going to change her. I'm not going to make her understand anything. And that's when the knife went in, right? So, you know, I was anticipating that scene in a sense, but it was still, for lack of a better term, good to see it, right? It was, the acting was great. Like Mark was saying, the cinematography with the dragon and melting of the Iron Throne. And Gina was saying, you know, how it's kind of just a whole hunk of metal just melted everywhere. It was just great altogether.
And then, you know, in the arms, it was kind of graceful. Like it wasn't some kind of nasty Grey Worm slash of the neck like he was doing to the Lannister army. Like it was, it was that bittersweet. Like it was something that we saw. Not only was it hard for John to do, he had to learn this whole thing. We saw Danny evolve and kind of de-evolve or keep evolving into something that we didn't want necessarily, unless you're a nut job. But
you can see how he was fighting it, right? Like when he's saying about you burnt all the children, and he's trying to
make, and that took guts. To come out the way he said it, like to see the mind frame she was, like mindset she was in, he put a lot on the line just to say that. And that was a good opening.
And she's just sitting there smiling at him. It's like, yeah, it's okay. Don't worry. We'll make it better. So it was very, very moving, but as I was watching it, it was more along the lines of, I can see where this is going and I hope it goes this way, but I still wasn't sure throughout the whole thing, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, and that was the, you know, I guess the real emotional part. I as much as I said, you know, I sat up and said, whoa, and the dragon kind of relieving the tension a little bit, even with the spectacle, I was like, really like emotional. Like I felt for John, and if he, you know, would have got burned, I think that would have been like, holy shit, like that would have like hurt a lot more than,
well, my prediction last week was that Daenerys would try to execute Jon with the dragon and the dragon would turn on Daenerys. So in a sense it kind of worked out that way, where Drogon let him live even after the fact that he killed her. So like Gina was saying, that there is a connection there, and you know, in the books anyways, they're always talking about dragons are intelligent. So I think even Drogon made that decision at that point that, all right, I guess, you know, he got rid of her. Somebody was going to eventually. So
you were partially right. So you'll get a partially empty bottle of this unnamed beverage that I have here.
There you go. Pride. One other thing to point out, man. She never sat the Iron Throne.
That's right. She touched it. And it was like, it was, and that was it.
Yeah. I thought, sorry, Gina, just quickly. There was, I'm not sure if they mentioned it in the show, but her father was constantly getting cut by the throne. And there's kind of like a myth to the throne that if you get cut while sitting there on the throne, it rejects you. And I think going back into Targaryen history, all the kings that, you know, didn't work out, they would get cut on the throne or something along those lines. I don't remember exactly. So I thought maybe when she touched it, she would get cut. And it would kind of be a little nod to the book readers that the throne is rejecting her.
Hey, listen, you guys got enough nods, all right? You got that ending scene we'll get to with the touching of the CGI. But, you know, you guys got a lot of nods. I don't know how many more you want. it definitely, there's always stuff that could be added. I mean, you know, we could probably get together, just us right here, this little panel, and come up with a whole episode that could be added. Yeah. You know, but,
With regards to Azor Ahai, if you don't mind, later on at some point, I'd like to read kind of like the little story. It's just a couple quick notes. And I'm going to change a few things just to see how it kind of all added up to John being the prince that was promised.
Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Father's Day is coming up. Take 20% off an order of $150 or more by using the code FANCY. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Check out their new Aladdin products. And don't forget, email us at podcastwinterfell@gmail.com to win a pair of Targaryen cufflinks by telling us your favorite moment of the series. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Thank you, Cufflinks, for your continuing support. We love you, Cufflinks. Cufflinks.com/DVR today.
Before we, I guess, leave the death and the flying away of Drogon, I want to, I guess, ask a question that's not, it's really rhetorical. Like, it doesn't really have an answer. But I want to see, like, if you guys use your imagination, like, what do you think the flight was? Was it the send-off? Was it something else? Was it visitation to somewhere to revive her? Was it bring her back to Volantis and where it all started, or Valyria? What do you guys think?
I think it's good meat.
Just fun to think about. You know, I basically, people started saying, why is this? Why is this? I said, it left it off so you could use your imagination. And I think that's the fun part. That was the whole bringing up stories and the reinforcement of books and, you know, the put it out there.
I don't think that, just leave it to your imagination. But I don't see anything happening from it. You know, no revivals, nothing like that. Just a touchy moment. He's gone. She's gone. They're leaving together and no more dragons in Westeros.
Oh, Gina, how?
It kind of, upon watching it, I thought, well, maybe he's taking her to the doom of old Valyria, which was, remember when Jorah and Tyrion were sailing through it at one point, and that's where the stone meant live. I thought, well, maybe he's taking her there because we know he's been there before. But then, I mean, yeah, can she be revived? Probably not, but there's something about that story when they go to when they're in the north and they go to that place where that waterfall is, and she says, you could spend 1,000 years here and no one would ever find you. It almost makes me wonder, well, maybe he could have taken her to a place like that in the north somewhere. And, it doesn't mean she couldn't be revived by some other creepy frozen children of the forest magic at some point in time.
Someone who kissed her went north.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? You know, like if you want to get really tinfoil hat theory, like that would be the one. But I think probably like taking her to kind of the Smoking Islands of Valyria, I would think is more likely.
That was exactly my thought. You know, like, these other thoughts are fun and everything, but I kind of thought it would have been fitting, like, to just perch her up maybe on some, like, monumental statue that's kind of like decrepit, but like of our family or something like that, or the dragons. And then he like sort of loses the connection and maybe dies with her. Marcus, you got anything on that?
I don't think so. I
know your brain's been busy. You might've had some to speculate.
I think it may be a poetic ending if he took her back to Marine. And I think Marine is the city in which she had done the most good, at least from the television side of it. And she really, really wanted to go to Westeros. She wanted to break the wheel. She wanted to do all these things, but in a way, looking back on it, the most good she could have done would have been within, you know, would have been in Essos and ruling in Meereen. And in a lot of ways, that's a lot of where her home is. And I am kind of sad that we never get to see another Daario sighting. I guess he's still ruling in Meereen, but no, I think that is a possibility.
Well, I always said that, you know, from years back, like I like the warmth. I like it looked like it was sandy and it was like very warm all the time. Like everybody was dressed like in nice linens and light clothes. Like I wouldn't have left there. You know, you got a whole coast that you can shore up. Like you can go on different vacations. You have a few different cities down the shoreline. You know, you could go back to Carth. You have this whole thing that you don't have to even worry about. Why would, you know, it's crazy that she was so focused on this mission of the Iron Throne that like it led her to leave that. She had conquered three cities. I mean, I don't know. I would have been chilling.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess that's the quest for power for this Game of Thrones that we got to watch, you know. We all would have made different decisions, and I'm sure, you know, along the way, like, but I think it's pretty cool that we're all kind of in the same boat, that we just feel like she has a send off. Cause I've seen some people saying like, you know, oh, what if she's getting revived by another Red Priestess and things like that. And then I'm like, I'm not ready to go down that hole yet.
Just whatever she does, she can't go back to Carth, please.
They should have had a credit scene like Marvel movie where like she gets revived and then the what's that guy's name? The warlock, what's his name? Pyre Pree. He came and actually finished her off because he never finished his job. That pissed me off. So many unanswered questions. So many unanswered questions. But I mean, that was like what, the first 40 minutes of the whole episode, and you know, we had another almost 40 left, and it was like resolution. So I guess we got a lot of the really, really hard emotional stuff out and the sad stuff out. You guys ready to move on to what's the
cup? Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? I know Jim's probably got something to say. Let's start off when they, you know, Grey Worm decides to bring Tyrion out, and it seems to be what, 3 weeks later, Tyrion says he spent 3 weeks down there thinking.
Yeah.
Let's go to that whole scene.
With Grey Worm, initially, I almost despised him for his actions, you know, with keeping him prisoners and his actions that he took. But on second thought, you know, I did watch it again today, and it kind of seemed to me like, you know, with Grey Worm in particular, he was always being told what to do, following orders. And the transition for me today, watching him a second time, was that he became his own boss. You know, he was finally a free man. He had some pull, and he used it to his advantage in the sense, or, you know, for what he thought was just. So initially, I didn't like Grey Worm at all in this episode, but I've come around to kind of see a different point of view from him. With regards to Tyrion's speech to that, you know, council, I guess, or whatever you want to call it, it was, you know, he brought up the scene was a little tricky for me to kind of, you know, like Marcus was saying earlier, John has a better story than Bran. I understand why they kind of went that way in the end, but I thought, you know, Tyrion's speech was, you know, heartwarming, but it was just kind of difficult to kind of get in the moment because of, you know, he was a prisoner and he was still alive and he didn't get executed. And I understand that Sansa was saying, you know, we have thousands of men outside your walls. If you kill Tyrion or Jon Snow, we're going to attack, right? So I understood there was a little give and take there, but, you know, the scene itself was great, you know, a little light comedy with Edmure Tully there, you know, giving his whole speech and then Sansa kind of telling him, please sit down. It was, overall it worked. You know, the comedic factors with them deciding to go to democracy and everybody laughing at them and, you know, Jon's voice saying, oh, my horse will get a vote now. And, you know, it was all good. It was just, it took me a little bit out of the moment just because Tyrion was still alive in a sense, although I never wanted to see him die. It kind of took me out of it a little bit.
Marcus, how you feel?
Yeah, I thought the scene was really well done. I did kind of like how the assortment of characters, I guess I could see how a lot of them made it up there, but there were a couple of characters on there and I had no idea who they were. And I don't know if anyone knew who they were, and maybe y'all could help me out with like a couple of them. But no, I really liked it. I like how, in a way, I feel like the show Tyrion is in a way the main character. And I like how it did end up with him talking and convincing the leaders of Westeros to unite around a single ruler. Even if they did laugh at democracy, in a way, I guess you could have saw it coming all along with Tyrion at, like, before the Battle of Winterfell, talking to Bran and talking to him after the battle too, and could see that foreshadowing. But I think one thing, and maybe this is what the accelerated character development is, you know, early on in the seasons, Tyrion is touted as extremely smart, very cunning, and can always think a couple steps ahead. But in the latter seasons, there's not really many decisions that I can point to where I guess the outcome was the outcome that he wanted. And I think that was, in a way, it helped show what the show was going to become, in that, for instance, the Bells, I was on for last week, and I know y'all talked about this, so I'm not going to get into it, but in a way, it's almost like if Daenerys may have listened to him with the Bells, if he hadn't have been wrong so many times beforehand. But then he comes back, and I like how it ended with him saying, with Bran saying, you're going to be my hand, and you're going to spend your whole life making up for all of your mistakes. I thought that was a great ending to it, and I think it really set up all of the future scenes really well.
I couldn't agree more. Something Axel had said, I'm going to reference the initial reaction show, that when that, or maybe it was Heath, but he said this should be his Emmy episode. And Axel jumped in and said, and not for supporting actor. And it should be for best actor, because essentially he is the main character. We see Bran kind of allude to, like, I'll be off at the end, you know, I'm going to jump ahead real quick, but he goes off, you know, I'm going to go look for Drogon. And essentially it's in Tyrion's hands. The ruling will be in left up to him most likely. And that is the complete character arc. And to me, that was the most, like, beautiful part of this whole thing. And, you know, we needed to see something, you know, I guess for me, like, I wanted a conclusion for, like, an arc. We got the Hound was a great one, but so many of our others are left open. And I don't mean like the send-offs we got tonight, last night, but like so many other things. We're like, why isn't this guy, you know, didn't this happen and didn't this happen? But Tyrion's was a really full, complete arc, and I loved it. And he brought it this episode that changed my whole opinion of his acting this season. And I understand where he was and where he was coming from. And when he came up out of that, like, it was, again, like the you know, low man, the downtrodden man, the crippled bastard, and the guy who was wrong. And, you know, it's the whole thing that we've been learning this whole time. It's the little man that's important. And, you know, Bran gains these powers, and Jon's so short, he comes back to life. And you know, Tyrion has all these troubles, and he's so smart, but he focused it on the wrong things. And now it's so great to see that he was the one that these people kind of knew, this new council. They were, you know, I guess, didn't have the confidence besides Sansa that to like know what to do. So Tyrion had the most experience. He's been with, you know, the hand of two kings. He's, you know, basically been around the world. He's done so many things, and it's so great to see that they pulled him out for this. And then to see, like, he was still in turmoil with Grey Worm, like, pulled, you know, you be quiet type of thing. So like that whole dynamic set, like the sad Tyrion to get to kind of come up his ladder. And now, real quick to answer you, Marcus, from before, I relied on the chat here, and Shayna filled us in exactly who was on the council. It looked like it was young Robin Arryn. We saw, Yara, Edmure, Ser Davos, Sam, the Prince of Dorne. But there was someone in between Edmure and Sam, which I'm not sure if anybody knows here, jump in and say who that was. And I think it says Gendry was there. And there was, I think, one other person. Royce. Lord Royce, Sansa, yeah. Bronn, Arya. I don't know who that one character was, though.
Then I guess you'd have the Reach had no lord. And then I'm guessing after everything was settled, Bronn became the Lord of the Reach, right? Highgarden. So he could have been there, but...
Yeah, all right. Well, so, you know, so we kind of have two nameless people. We'll assume that they have some sort of power, but it could possibly, like you said, Bronn could have definitely assumed that role right after the dust settled. Yeah. Oh, man. So, I, you know, this whole thing, I did not see it coming. Did Gina, did you see, like, Sansa not going along with this? Like, did you see this whole choice happening? Like, when it unfolded, I was in shock. But did you think she was going to not go along with it and have the guts to do that, even though it was her brother?
So, yeah, I feel like she was really going to vie hard to keep the North independent all along. And that was kind of what her plea was to Daenerys when they sat down and had that girl chat, you know, in the study or whatever. She's like, well, what about the North? You know, I think Sansa had it in her mind probably ever since they won back Winterfell from the Boltons that she wanted to find a way, and especially with Cersei sitting as queen, that she wanted to find a way to make sure that the North didn't ever have to deal with whoever was in King's Landing again. You know, and I think, you know, she'd made it very clear, I will never go to King's Landing again, as long as Cersei, you know, is in power there. So that didn't surprise me. And I think Sansa has been shaping up to be a pretty good ruler in her own right. I think she really has the best interest of her people at heart. I think she's very, both kind of a combination of logical and caring. So that didn't surprise me. I think everyone was surprised at the idea of Bran the Broken. I mean, the look on Arya's face was pretty priceless. Like, her mouth drops and she's like, what? That was pretty good. And then, Yeah, I mean, that scene was great. Like, especially Sansa just, like, really sticking it to her uncle. Like, uncle, please sit down. And then he didn't. And she kind of gives him the eyebrow. And I was just like, girl, you're on fire. It was, like, just so funny. It was very reminiscent of Brendan the Blackfish, her uncle, who when, you know, just kind of what he thought of his nephew in from earlier episodes. And but yeah, I wasn't surprised at Sansa, you know, and I thought she handled it super diplomatically. She's like, you're going to make a great king, but, you know, this is, and I think, you know, the North's always been different and difficult to control. And, you know, I think she's in some ways lucky they selected Bran, because I think he's one of a few of the people there that would understand that and let it happen. So in some ways, I think Bran becoming king was, you know, a bigger part to the North being liberated to be its own country and territory than we know. I'd also like to add that some of the funniest things I've seen going around the internet were that young John Aaron has pulled a Neville Longbottom, where he started off kind of a unattractive child and then morphed into someone hot. Like, there have been articles about that. Like, people are like, how am I really disturbed that I think John Aaron is hot right now, or Robin Aaron is hot right now? I just thought that was really funny.
Yeah, he came out looking like he should be in a boy band. He was a fine-looking young man.
I know. Like, he's come a long way since, you know, season one, and he was, you know, sucking on his mom's boobie.
Maybe that, you know, he has good skin. Maybe it helped.
Well, yeah. It's funny because my wife asked me who he was, and I said, remember that 10-year-old that was sucking on that boobie? And I was like, oh, my God, that's him? He grew up good.
I thought you were going to say it's funny because we still breastfeed my 11-year-old.
No, not here, not here. Yeah, it was good. It was good. So with regards to Bran on the throne, I'm assuming nobody here predicted that, right?
No. I it's actually funny you said it. My buddy Joe called this like midweek last week, like maybe Wednesday. He's like, I've been thinking about it. It pieces add up. It's got to be Bran. I'm like, how so? I'm like, he's the three-eyed raven. He knows he has a duty. I'm texting him back and forth. I'm like, all these reasons, it's not Bran. And I'm like, it's so sad. I'm like, that's silly. I'm like, and I'm telling him like all these justifications for all these different people. To me, it could have been almost anybody in the show. Like, I was almost on board with young Sam coming out in like a retrospective, like years down the road, like type thing, like telling about the old days, like, you know, as the king. I you know, that was Axel's main crackpot theory. But
yeah, I remember.
It's that was way out of left field. And to me, that was another wild, shocking twist. Like, it came from Tyrion. It came out of, like, as slow paced as the episode was and dialogue driven, it was beautiful. Like, that to me, everything was like shocking. Like, I didn't see the John thing. And to me, that like, it should have been like, holy shit. Instead, I was like, whoa. And I was like into it more because of the passion I felt. Like, so this was like to me, seeing Bran picked was, I was like, what?
So I guess we can confirm now that Bran can see the future as well, right? Because he saw the dragon flying over Westeros a few years back. He mentions to Tyrion, that's why I came here today. Why do you think I came here today? So he can't, you know, he could see the past. And I think to me, it looks like he could see the future as well.
Yeah, why else would I come here? That's an awesome answer.
Yeah, that was pretty. I was like, oh, Bran, you are one sly little devil. I did think it was funny when they were finally sitting around the table. He's like, oh, we have no master of whisperers. I'm like, can't you take care of all that and tune in to, you know, your secret spidey senses and figure out what's happening with everyone?
I took that in the sense that, you know, Bran's character is not going to mingle with anything. Like, he'll let everything play out the way it plays out, but he won't disrupt anything going forward type of thing.
That's why I thought he couldn't be the king, like, because he would be too passive with that. Like, he wouldn't, like, make a decision. He'd say, well, what do you think we should do? And, like, you know, that's, to me, bizarre. But the way Tyrion explained it, I was like, oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah, makes sense. I'm on board. And, I mean, while I don't live tweet ever, I don't, like, do that stuff, but, like, I jumped on Facebook and I wrote, yay. You know, I was like, I'm in, A. When he said that, yay, A. I put A right on Facebook. Like, I was so excited. Like, I'm in for this. Cause we're, you know, that it was so exciting at that point.
Yeah, it was definitely a good choice. I Marcus, definitely enjoyed the outcome of it.
Marcus, you like the new king or what?
I like how it is. I mean, I have no problems with the ending. So I like I said earlier, I thought that they were going to go with democracy. The North was going to sue for independence. And then that's how I thought it was going to end. So when Sam stood up, I'm like, yes, guessed it. And then everyone laughed at him. I'm like, oh, okay. So we're just doing, we're doing this again. But like, given the choices, in a way, Tyrion was a lot of people's choices, and Tyrion was a very good choice, I think, looking at the show. So in a way, by choosing Bran and knowing that Bran, based off that one meeting that we saw, is going to delegate a lot of things and just chill out, I guess. I think it couldn't have ended better.
I mean, like our good friends at the Joffrey podcast always say, you know, evil Uncle Tyrion just doesn't measure up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't think of like another character I would prefer, because in a way, I don't believe Jon, even though a lot of people had predicted him for the throne, I don't know if he actually wanted the throne. In a way, I think his ending going up north and being with Tormund and the Wildlings is almost what I thought he would have done regardless.
Yeah. That's another reason, that I think Jon shouldn't have been king. Like, I think there was almost like Bran, like, he was very passive too. Like, he doesn't want to make hard decisions. He only made them when he had to. And he was never for that. He wanted to serve, you know, all men must serve, you know, Valar Morghulis, Valar Dohaeris. So I don't know. I liked it. Jim, what do you think? You like our king?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was like I said, it was a nice surprise, but it's one of those things where now that you've seen it, I personally can't unsee it. I don't know who else would go on there. Initially, I said I had a couple of different theories, in a sense, from last week that, you know, Jon takes the throne, but then abdicates, heads out north. Tyrion marries Sansa and they rule together. But this totally makes sense. It seems like I can't see any other possibility going forward, just based on the fact that I cannot see it anymore.
Yeah, and then the when Sansa stepped in, I was like, oh, here we go, more conflict. And then the way it turned out, I feel like everybody got what they wanted. She's the queen in the north. She still has rule. She's happy that her people are free. But you know, like, going back to Bran a little bit, what you said, Marcus, about wanting democracy, as soon as Sam said that, I was like, holy shit, like, this is going to happen. Like, it was kind of a far off thing a lot of people wanted, and like it would have made sense. But I do feel that as much as they laughed it off, the way they're setting this up, that they're going to come together and choose, is going to be a sort of democracy. They're like almost like, I guess, like a small parliament, like, right now, but like, they'll maybe the next step up, they'll be so evolved that, you know, because from what we know, the Three-Eyed Raven lives a long time. So if Bran actually does this and he's unopposed by any evil forces, he should live a long time, well past his whole council. So maybe by that time, people will be evolved to make their own decisions. So I think it as far as democracy is in this world, that I think this is the peak into it. So I think that was beneficial. Gina, do you like our king?
So I think it's a fine choice. I kind of thought anyone from Sam to Davos could have been on it. I'm going to say something fairly unpopular, probably with females. I know there were a lot of women upset that a woman didn't end up on the Iron Throne and felt Daenerys was disserviced and everything. But, change does not happen overnight. I think they laid groundwork for that it would have to be a man taking over, that the old lords of Westeros probably weren't really ready for a female leader. Shocking, right? And
all these parallels. This is wild.
I know it is. It is kind of wild, and and I think they did take a good first step towards democracy. I think there are a lot of things that, while it's not the ultimate happy ending, everyone gets their way outcome that I think, people hope for. I think it was realistic. I think the bright spots were that they have, gone to the lords and ladies deciding who are going to rule. And then maybe the next step is some type of election. I think, it's incredibly amazing that not only did we see the first woman knighted in Westeros, but we also saw the first woman become Lady Commander of the Kingsguard. That's Brienne's new role. And so I think that's actually a really great first step in maybe seeing a woman lead Westeros by the choice of the people. I think Sansa taking over as Queen of the North, I think that is something that those people wanted. I think she's right. They might have been happy that a Stark was ruling, but I think they probably wanted their independence from the Seven Kingdoms more than they wanted to see a Stark on the Iron Throne. I think there were some important first steps made for Westeros as a society and a political entity and everything. So
I have a quick question, right? When they used to say the Seven Kingdoms, they included Dorne or they didn't? Wasn't Dorne, didn't they pull out of that, all that?
I think they were still technically a Seventh Kingdom, but I think they've always been somewhat estranged in a weird way since the Targaryens took over. Actually, I'm reading the Targaryen history right now. They've always been somewhat estranged, and I think that they had become more united at a couple of different points along the way, particularly when Oberyn's sister was married to Rhaegar.
Right. So if they broke away, they were always saying Seven Kingdoms, they really should have technically been saying what Tyrion said, Six Kingdoms, because Dorne's back in and then Winterfell left, so it's really the Six Kingdoms again.
Yeah, kind of. I think they always kind of, Dorne was still factored in and still kind of under their thumb a little bit, but less, I think they chose to be less involved with what was happening in the capital after what happened to Elia Martell. So, I think they've always just been kind of a little outlier, but have been considered part of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, I think it was because they were never conquered, right? No dragons.
They never were, yeah. They never were conquered.
Well, with regards to women, like Gina was saying, so you have Sansa in the north. You had Daenerys, who did become a queen even for a moment, I guess, right? You have Asha that, puzzling, that she was given her own kingdom, but I guess that was from Daenerys. And then the Dornish are also more open to women being equals in a sense, right? So, yeah, I think setting going forward, it does set up a possibility that, the Seven Kingdoms become six and five and four and three and two and one, And then eventually they each elect their own rulers, including women. So, yeah, I think the outlook is good there.
Did we lose Tim?
I'm thinking maybe we did.
Oh.
But he's muted.
Oh.
He muted himself accidentally. Hey, Tim, you got to come back.
Tim, maybe he had to take a water break.
Possibly. That's why you got to get adult diapers.
Yeah. Oh. I feel lost without him. What's happening?
I know. He was kind of guiding us along. Well, okay. So I guess we could transition into Arya, perhaps. You know, and
yeah.
West of Westeros.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was from kind of the epilogue on. I just kind of cried the whole rest of the time. Seeing where, like, the Starks were going next. Like, her going west of Westeros. I mean, I think I think there are a couple things also, and I mean, you know, they, I guess they forgot to talk about, you know, they were freeing quotation marks John, sending him to the wall, but one of the first kind of big hints that, oh, we could come back in 10 years was John kind of saying, was it worth it or something like that? And Tyrion said, ask me again in 10 years.
Yeah, they opened up that door there, right?
Yeah. And then
I can't see the actors coming back, though. Do you?
I don't know. Maybe not for a whole series, but maybe for an HBO movie that airs in movie theaters like they did.
There you go.
All right. Well, I was listening on the phone when I went upstairs to do something, and I heard you guys talking. I'm sorry I abandoned you, but I'm back.
Adult diapers, Tim, adult diapers.
But you can depend on me and my diapers. So what you were saying, I had to talk with Axel about this today, and he feels there's going to be a sequel coming up, like there of some sort, like a spinoff that is involved in this world, be it like the fun joke we were talking about with Arya the Explorer, or what did you call it, Gina? Arya or Sails West?
West of Westeros. That's what the show's called.
You know, whether it's her or Jon in the North and whatever it is, that we were saying that it's, first of all, from a marketing standpoint for HBO, it's insanity to not capitalize on this. I know they're going to do the prequels, but you can ride this out for a long time. There's a lot of loyal fans, and this is the type of fandom that even though they hate it and get mad, they'll watch it no matter what. So,
and I think Arya is one of those characters, well, as an actress, she's young enough where going forward, she can, you know, expand her role so she's not typecast in a sense, but still, like you guys said, come back to every once in a while, right? So I think she would be the best character for that.
Right. Now, I don't watch a lot of overseas cinema. I've seen some things that the cast members have been in. Rob's been in a few things. Sansa, I think, has like the biggest role as Jean Grey in X-Men, which is huge. She's probably her and Emilia Clarke, because Emilia Clarke has had some romantic movies, dramedies over here that hit the stateside. That I think she's pretty big. But my point to Axel is I don't think most of the cast has enough to support a blockbuster, which is what a lot of studios want to make. They want a big hero movie. They want a big thing where they can promote this next chapter from this actor, actress's career, bootstrapped from this Game of Thrones. But I think that together they make a phenomenal cast and it works that well. I think a lot of them will have to take lesser roles. depending on what kind of roles. I don't see them, you know, like Davos, I can't see him being in something like other than a period piece, like, you know, and he's up there, you know, maybe, you know, I just like, you know, I feel like there's room for the money and the steady work for these actors and actresses to want to come back to this, for this to be the smarter move. So, I mean,
let's hope so.
Yeah. You know, that's like the hope I have, and it kind of makes sense. I would love to see them all, you know, succeed. You know, I'm not trying to hold anybody back, but it's just a feeling I have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those things where a series this long, it's hard for them to break out of that typecast, right? And besides John, well, I guess ultimately the three Starks left, well, Bran too, I guess, but Sansa, I can't see too much happening there in the north going forward, so I don't see anything happening there, but other than John and Arya, I can't really see anybody leading in a new series, right?
Yeah, I think it would be Arya seems to be the more logical choice. And then if they did something to revisit like this cast in Westeros, I do think taking the Sex and the City approach to like doing a big movie would probably be the best way to go. Because then it's not a huge commitment for all of them, but it's a nice chance to kind of get back together and, you know, find a new story to tell. I mean, I think, you know, that could be interesting.
They could sit around a campfire reading a book and I think we'd all watch it because we'd be like, what is this? Oh my God, I gotta see this. This is awesome. This is amazing. So, I mean, I'll take anything. They could do a commercial. I'm like, holy shit, this is great. But,
would they need George R. R. Martin's permission for that?
I think HBO owns Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones. They don't own Song of Ice and Fire.
George has never written anything west of Westeros, so it'd be interesting to see how they'd approach it.
And I'm sure if we ask Twitter, they'll tell us exactly who they want to write it. So they don't even need to go to a casting room. They can just like, Twitter, what do you guys want? And then you can piece it all together from everybody's opinions.
Yeah, there are a couple things in the books that, I mean, he's never gone west of Westeros, but there are mentions of people who have tried to go west. Another Stark did. I think Tyrion had another uncle that did. You know, there was a woman back in the early Targaryen days that did, and all these people were never really heard from again. So it could be interesting that, you know, if they go west of Westeros, we might still see some of the same families.
Yeah, of course you are. It's a globe. They're just going to go right in a circle. You're going to see the same families right away.
Well, what's between those? I mean, we'll see.
Let me get the map over here. I'll show you how it works. Oh, scheisse.
I mean, the myth of that is anyone that's sailed west has never been heard from again. So I don't know that anyone has successfully circumnavigated.
They found paradise. Look, see?
Maybe.
This is it, right? And then if you make it like a cylinder, right? I know Essos is missing from me, but look, you just come right back around.
But that's pretty small. And supposedly George says it's larger than Earth is.
Unless he's a part of the Flat Earth Society and Flat Planetos Society. That's a whole different ballgame. I want to see Arya and Salvador like shipmates and be like, hey, what can we go do today? And they're like just like a goofy like sitcom, like a half hour sitcom. They're just like goofing around. But what we want and what we get. So I want to go to now. We've talked a lot about, you know, everything that's happening. I before we leave and go to the small council that's set up and everything, I want to talk about a weird decision that I can't really figure out, and I hope you guys can help me out with. So Grey Worm has Tyrion, presents him to this council that's convened to put pressure on Grey Worm because they know they're holding King's Landing. So Grey Worm allows them in to have this meeting. They bring out Tyrion, not Jon, as per their demands. They still want Jon dead for what he did. which I feel is understandable. But why does Grey Worm go along with all this, have any kind of say in anything, and then just leave? It makes no sense to me. Somebody jump in and tell me. Marcus, maybe you got the answer.
I believe there was a couple weeks that went by, and I believe Grey Worm is a man of duty, and duty has been a theme of Game of Thrones throughout. And even before that scene, Tyrion and Jon had this long talk about love is the death of duty and duty is the death of love. And I think it had happened so soon after that Grey Worm was, continuing to serve his queen as best as he knew how, even though he knew that she was gone. And after the meeting, the council meeting that they had, I think he was finally ready to move on, and that was his freedom in a way, from no more fighting. We're going to go to Narth, and he has the remaining Unsullied with him. And I think that was a good arc for Grey Worm. I think that character is one of the harder ones, I think, to go with, to develop a lot of depth with, because of how he's introduced in the show, and that the Unsullied are these soldiers, and even though they're free, they still follow orders without question. And that is something that was shown at the very beginning of the show. So I think it was kind of a good ending in a way that at the end they peace out and they go do their own thing and take no orders from anyone.
Yeah, I still don't buy it, because they didn't get the revenge for Dany. I mean, they don't know what sending someone north is. Like, it was such a ruse. Like, it was like basically like telling them what they wanted to hear. I felt like they were more ruthless than that. Even the Dothraki, like, if they found out what Grey Worm knew, that obviously they all found out because Jon's locked up, why didn't the Dothraki go nuts? Gina, help me out.
I mean, I think this is where, some of the rush to get to the end comes into play. Like, I think you're right. It doesn't necessarily make sense. I don't think the writers necessarily thought through. It is hard for me to kind of think how they finally convinced Grey Worm in the end to back off and take his people elsewhere. Maybe he, I think initially when Missandei was still alive, they were going to leave this place anyway. And, maybe, and we didn't see it, he came to the realization, like, you know what, this isn't a place I belong. And it's not a place I was going to stay, even if Daenerys had continued to, had lived and was going to rule. He had no intention of staying, and he was, he told Missandei he would take the Unsullied to Narth to protect them. And so maybe he figured, at least I know that there was one person from Narth that loved me once, and maybe I'll go there and just continue to serve her memory and protect her people. I don't know. I think it does seem very unopened and unfinished, and like they didn't really think that through. And it seems like a very snap judgment decision.
Yeah, it's, nitpicky, but like it to me, that was, would have made more sense if he was removed from the scenario. I guess it would have been like who brought him out. But if Grey Worm would have just brought him out and like didn't seem so authoritative, then it would have made more sense. But instead, he seemed like, you all listen to me. Like, we'll fight you back. And then it was just like, all right, no problem. We'll just leave. It just, that maybe was a little flat and unsatisfying for me. But I agreed with like how they appeased them and got rid of Jon, so that I guess they could continue on, because essentially, this just was the resetting of the wheel. And even though the wheel is broken, they're all different spokes that came together, and it's got to start over. And that's how, we like to think sometimes, like, certain in our own world, a country, a county, your local government, a foreign government is bad, and we see certain things are bad. And we're like, well, why can't they, you know, they just do this when we're looking from afar? But when you're in it, you can't just shut down. Like, it's like we say, why is there road work every day? Why do they got to do this and close one lane? Why can't they shut the whole highway down? They can't do that, because if they shut the whole thing down, nobody can move. So they got to do a little bit. So with the government, you know, you can't just axe it all. Danny wanted to just cripple it all. Essentially, it's not possible. So that's why they had to kind of re-come up with enhancements and tweak it. And, you know, seeing this birth of democracy. And I feel like that was the final, like, message of the whole series to me, was that, like, everything's the same in the end, but as much as it's the same, it needs to be changed. And you have to just adapt and keep things slow moving. And you can't abruptly change everything. And that's, you know, was my overall take of this series. And, you know,
quickly on the Grey Worm situation, it's also important to remember that they're under a siege more or less right now, right? So I think from his point of view, the Unsullied are more or less freedmen, right? Since Daenerys freed everybody and they volunteered to be there. And he had to come up with some kind of compromise to end up going to North to kind of hold up that last wish of Missandei there. So, I don't know, to me it makes sense. He just compromised in a way where he can get out safely, fulfill his girlfriend's last wish, and everybody gets what they want.
Well, I like what you said. If you would have told them, take out this Tyrion digging up his brother's hand scene and put this in, I would have been satisfied.
Yeah.
All right. So we're getting close to the end, and the end gave us these beautiful, beautiful send-offs. And I want to just toss it around. We'll go from last caller to the first caller, and I want to start with Marcus. And tell me anything you loved, liked, disliked in these send-offs.
I think the crowning of Sansa was a really powerful moment, and how she stood up for the North, even when Bran, her own brother, was going to be king of the Seven Kingdoms, now six. I think that was my favorite moment. And I guess one thing I am curious about is, was John petting the wolf actually in there, like, the whole time? Or did they freak out at all the backlash in episode four and be like, hey, Kit, you got to come back, and we got to like CGI you with this wolf real quick.
Absolutely impossible to get that whole scene redone like that. There's no way. They had to have that. I mean, it sounds funny, like it is coincidental fan service, because every book reader I know freaked out. Like, it was like disturbing them that he didn't pet the dog. I'm like, this is kind of irrelevant compared to the whole city that got burned and whatnot. But, you know, but I'm glad everybody, you know, was left off with that. You know, there was something for everyone to feel somewhat satisfied. And if you weren't satisfied with at least something in the send-off scene, like, then you should have watched something different.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think I don't think that, like, the people that, I guess, were not impressed with the show by any stretch, or, like, the last episode, I guess I'm kind of surprised. I mean, it's definitely not the craziest ending I've ever seen, but in a way it's kind of a perfect ending, because similar to how Game of Thrones has been since day one, is that it doesn't give you everything you want. And that's why at least I've enjoyed watching it so much, is that, yeah, this was about as happy of an ending as I think they could have given, you know, like, nothing too crazy happened.
Right. And if, you know, we've been following along the trend of the show and the patterns they've been laying out, it was kind of fit the piece. Like, it fit right in.
Yeah, for sure.
Right on. Jimbo, what do you think? Wait. Well, I said, let's take that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's go to Gina. Oh, I did say Gina.
I mean, I I cried for the whole rest of the end because I was just, it was, you know, it's like we're saying goodbye to these characters that we've really grown to love. And, you know, I was super excited for Arya. I think that's like the most kind of, you know, promising and, you know, kind of, ooh, what's going to happen to her? Because I think, you know, there's definitely the most kind of possibility for a story. And I kind of think back to Sandor telling her revenge is not a life, like go have a life. And she's going to go have a life, you know, she's going to go explore. And I think that's awesome. You know, when John left Winterfell that time and did not say goodbye to his dog and was, you know, he was saying goodbye to Sam and Tormund in a way that I'm like, he's either going to die or he's going to end up back in the north at the end of this all. And I'm glad it was the latter. I think, you know, Tormund said, you've got the real north in you. I think, you know, Tormund knew that probably in John's heart, he wanted to be, maybe not necessarily at the wall, but that he was his, you know, kind of most true self up in the north during the time he spent with the wildlings. And, you know, it seems that's where he's going to go next. And then, you know, Sansa, that was an amazing scene and her gown, like everyone's going crazy over that with the weirwood leaves on it. You know, it was a really nice, stunning scene. I think to just see her get the accolades and her coronation Queen of the North, and people are making all sorts of ties to it, to Queen Elizabeth the first coronation. And, you know, they both have red hair. They wore it down. It was, you know, kind of very similar. But no, I thought it was a nice way to say goodbye. And yeah, I pretty much bawled that whole last 15 minutes or so.
It was beautiful. I loved it. I mean, I didn't cry per se, but I felt so satisfied. Everybody got something, and it was the right people. There was one person I didn't feel belonged, but before I get to my say, I want to hear what Jim has to say.
Yeah, I think the ending just wrapped everything up nicely for all the characters, and specifically for the Starks. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier. Arya going west is exactly what her character would want to do, right? Explore and have adventure and see new things and, you know, not go back to Winterfell in a sense. With Sansa, yeah, like Marcus was saying, it was very powerful to see her finally get, you know, the Queen of the North title. And it was touching. And when she put on that gown and I saw the red leaves on the inside, For a quick moment there, I thought she was getting married, because I thought when she married Ramsay, they put on a gown similar to her with the weirwood leaves there. So I thought we were going to see some kind of, you know, union between two big houses. But yeah, that was a good moment. And then with John, you know, the show opened with Rangers walking out the door, first episode, first scene, and it finished the same way with, you know, Rangers, or I guess John walking out the door from the wall, and it was just a perfect circle, right? It was.
This is exactly the reason you get a bottle like this. This is, see, you're the man, Jim. You've been doing this, you know, I've been on the same call with you many, many times back when the Matt days through this show, and that's right there. Like, I didn't even think of that. That's so brilliant. I love that.
Exactly.
Oh, man, you're the man. Thank you. That makes me feel better, even more.
Yeah, but I felt for John, though, like, kind of completing his whole story from the beginning to the end, it almost felt like he was a pawn in everybody else's game, right? Including in this last piece. Remember, he was traded away in a sense for Bran becoming king. And it was kind of fitting that, you know, he started being a nobody, a bastard, unwanted. And in the end, same thing. They sent him away. And I'm not even sure if Varys's letters got out by the look of how everybody reacted. He's right back where he started, pretty much, right?
Yeah, no one said the other name at all in any reference to anything.
Yeah, so I'm not sure those letters made their way out.
But it really didn't matter, because I think all that lineage shit is over. Doesn't, you know, they're going to choose now, and whoever you are, it doesn't matter. If you get there and somehow you're, you know, accepted, you know, that's what it is. But no, I've loved it. Loved it, loved it.
Do you mind if I read the Azor Ahai thing?
Yeah, real quick before you do that, I just want to say a couple of things.
Okay. So just quickly, I'm going to change a couple of quick... Oh, sorry, you want
to... No, I want to say something real quick. Yeah, no, you take your time. Ahead, man. One thing that bothered me, as much as he's been probably my top five favorite character in the whole series throughout the entire run, Bronn was so out of place this episode. It irked me. That and Grey Worm, but Grey Worm not as much as Bronn. Bronn just, it was too ridiculous that he was there. I could have seen him being a High Lord, but not Master of Coin. And then like jumping in when he asks where the dragon is, and Sam like says, well, that's been seen. And he goes, oh, I'd rather not see it. Like weird shit. Like that took me out of it. I don't need to dwell on it, but I had to get it out. But what I did love was John's ending. A lot of people in a couple of Facebook groups I'm in really didn't like it. We're talking about, very like, I guess coming from like the machismo tough guy angle, and like John should have been king, the male dominant ruler, and this and that. And to me, he didn't convey any of that. Like he conveyed more of the, like you said, he belonged in the North, and he earned their respect from what he did, not from trying to fight his way and take it. And that was more like the right send off for John's emotional state. Like he didn't need to go in there and battle somebody again. He got there and he had already earned the respect of the Northern wildlings. Like how much better is that to rule them and not rule, but even just be with them? Hey, who knows if he's ruling? To me, that was a beautiful, beautiful send off. That was, you know, a perfect ending to me. I loved it. And I'd love right now if maybe, Jim, you could read like an excerpt.
Yeah, so just quickly, not to take up too much time. So I'm going to replace a couple of words here with familiar terms for the show, right? So this is from the books. So it says, darkness lay over the world, and a hero, let's call him Jon Snow, was chosen to fight against it, to fight the darkness. Jon Snow needed to forge a hero sword. He labored for 30 days and 30 nights until it was done. However, when he went to temper it in water, the sword broke, and he was not one to give up easily, so he started over. So I think there the water can be replaced with White Walkers, right? So he fought the White Walkers, and it didn't end the story. The second time, it took 50 days and 50 nights to make the sword even better than the first. To temper it this time, he captured a lion and drove the sword into its heart, but once more, the steel shattered. That's the Lannisters. He helped kill the Lannisters, right? Take him off the throne. The third time, with a heavy heart, for he knew beforehand what he must do to finish the blade, he worked for 100 days and 100 nights until it was finished. This time he called his wife, let's say Daenerys Targaryen, and asked her to bear her breast. He drove his sword into her living heart. Her soul combining with the steel of the sword created Lightbringer, the Red Sword of Heroes. Her blood, soul, strength, and courage went into the steel of the sword, creating Lightbringer. And following this sacrifice, Lightbringer was as warm as Daenerys Targaryen had been in life. Once Jon Snow fought a monster, when he thrust his sword through the belly of the beast, its blood began to boil. Smoke and steam poured from its mouth, its eyes melted and dribbled down its cheeks, and its body burst into flames. That last part, I think, is after he killed Daenerys, Drogon destroys the Iron Throne, and that's Jon being the prince that was promised.
Dude, that's beautiful.
Hopefully it makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. I mean, all that stuff happened.
Yep, and that's the prophecy in the books. They didn't touch up on it in the show too much, but I just thought that was a nod, one last nod to book readers, right?
Gina, you got an input on this.
Yeah, no, I think that was a nice nod to book readers, that whole kind of prophecy, making it in, even though they never talked about it. I think that was well done.
Those hack writers, right?
Yeah, see, that's why the knee-jerk reactions kill everything.
I say it sarcastically. I enjoyed
it. I know you do.
It was great. I defend them a little bit too much sometimes. I understand both points of views, you know, and I'm coming from both sides, books and shows, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody's got to enjoy it for what it is. It's a show. It's, you know, it's not the books. Enjoy it for what it is. And I certainly did. And I'm glad that, you know, we all got together throughout the years to kind of discuss it and ponder over it and, you know, cry and laugh and get pissed off at it. But overall, it was a great ride.
For sure. So that being said, Gina, you know, let's start with you. If you want to say any closing thoughts, any questions, anything you want to bring up, let's kick it around there, because I'm feeling the wrap up coming the way Jim just said that. I don't want the waterworks to go yet.
I mean, I just, you know, I think they wrapped it up as well as they could have, and you know, people can complain, but you know, I actually thought, you know, I think they did a great job ending this. The last episode was super satisfying. And you know, I'm going to miss the show, but there's a lot more to come, you know, the prequel and who knows what will come after this. And yeah, and I'm moving on to start my own podcast. I should be hopefully up on iTunes tomorrow, but it's on SoundCloud and I've posted.
What's the name of the feed? Tell everybody.
So the podcast is called Resisting Gilead, and you can follow that handle on Facebook. And I posted the trailer there today, and you can find that on SoundCloud as well. But hopefully it'll be on iTunes soon too. And that season starts June 4th. I've done a couple like kind of pre-show pieces that I'm going to try and put up before that. And then we're going to, you know, kind of cover the show and the intersection of kind of what's happening in society today, because there are a lot of like really kind of scary parallels. So yeah, it's going to be heavy, but it should be interesting. Hopefully.
Well, we could find parallels in a dragon fantasy show to this world. I'm sure I'm going to be freaked out when I hear your parallels to The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched it, but that's the next thing on the roster because of you and your show. So I want to catch up and do that. So, Marcus, do you have any final thoughts? Anything?
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed the way the entire show started all the way to the end. I picked it up in season two, I believe. So I've been watching it for quite a while, following along, and I've never read the books. I believe that I'm going to pick up the books after this, and I'll probably start reading them over the summer. But in a way, I really liked the central themes that like it focused on. And even if the, you know, the latter seasons, the timelines were accelerated, with a television show with a scope so large, I don't know how people could really critique it and say it could be done better, because taking multiple books and actually going past the books within eight seasons, which is, I think it was roughly 75 hours of film on television. I mean, it's what they've been able to accomplish is pretty amazing. And I like how the last season, it focused on pretty much two core concepts. The first is how humans can unite to overcome evil, which is the Night King. I kind of like how, and you know, just in the middle of the season, we had all this build up around it and everyone united together to defeat evil. And then we were right back to fighting each other. And I like that. And because it does show the destructive nature of humanity in a way, but it also shows how we can come together. And I think the ending of the show really set it up for if there is something that comes after in the next 10 years where it can show democracy or other like more modern forms of governance. So I really liked that. I thought that was cool. And thank you all for, you know, welcoming me into the community and letting me hop on the podcast. This has been great. And yeah, I mean, when I built Guest of Throne, you know, it was me and one of my buddies, and we had a couple other folks help us out, and we were like, yeah, we think it's a good idea. Let's go with it. We really like the show, and we thought it would be something cool to give back to the community. And it's been great to see how nice the community has been and really welcoming. And yeah, it's been great. So thank y'all.
You jumped in and you made a big splash, and you're now a big part of it. So thank you. Yeah. So, what can I say? I got a lot to thank everybody for. I would like to, you know, thank everybody individually, but this has been too long a run to do that. First person I will thank is the creator, Matt Murdock. Thank you so much for, you know, doing this. And I was on the first call over there, and now I'm hosting the call on the same show. And it's morphed into such a great, intimate conversation on YouTube, and that's turned into our podcast, and, you know, adapted, and we're growing, and we got a lot more friends, and we got people like you, Marcus, and Jim and Gina that are in with me now. And, you know, this is great. A whole new type of format, and we got all new friends here, and I couldn't be happier. Second, you know, by name, I got to definitely give a big thanks to Axel Foley for, you know, pushing me to be better and, you know, getting me involved to podcast better, and hopefully not say like as much and do a lot of weird things that I used to do, habit forming. But on the whole, I mean, I met so many great friends. I met in person, on, you know, through chat like this, through Twitter, Facebook groups, through just online. And, you know, it's just been a great ride. I've really enjoyed the show. As much as we nitpick little tiny things, this whole podcast has really been so positive about the show. All tonight, we've been barely had any complaints. We've been saying such great things. We've been in such a good headspace. I feel like we all are leaving in a good place with the show. It was a great ride. The fan base has been phenomenal. I just can't say enough of how much I enjoyed my time spending chatting with you all on here. Anybody who's been on, anybody who's been in the chats, you know, it's just been great. And I'm, you know, at a real loss for words, I guess, now, because I could just keep going on about how great it is. And I probably said great like 100 times, and it is great. But thank you all. Thanks, Gina. Jim, thanks for being here so long. Marcus, thanks for being here. I know Axel wants to thank you all for coming, spending your time with us. And, you know, look for us, DVRpodcast.com. We're going to be doing other shows. Axel's going to be covering Big Little Lies with Jenny. Westworld is on its way. If you guys haven't seen that, that was a great preview. Oh my gosh. We have the Westworld Theory Cast. We're going to blow it up huge. And The Watchmen. Oh yeah. So we're going to say goodbye now, and it's not goodbye for much longer, because I'm going to be back doing something different, maybe something the same, but whatever it is, it's going to be better than it was yesterday. All right. Thank you all for being with me, taking this ride with me. Valar Morghulis.